Cool.
Whereas a reactor is an energy production system. And the key thing is we need to switch to carbon-free fuel, not fuel-free systems.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the AfriNuke podcast. On this podcast, we bring you interesting professionals and individuals that have distinguished themselves in different aspects of nuclear technology. And today's episode, we have a very interesting person in the person of Mike Conley. He's an author and he has written a book, The Earth is a Nuclear Planet. So we are going to have some discussions on different aspects of this interesting book that he has written for the community and also for the world at large. Mr. Mike Conley, I know we have talked a bit about you, but would love that you tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a writer. I'm not a scientist. I'm a writer, but I'm a science nerd, and I became very interested in nuclear power about 2010, and I joined a group called the Thorium Energy Alliance, and basically I was a nuclear fanboy, but I'm a nerd, and so I started talking to all these scientists, pestering them to explain all this stuff to me, and they did. And my deal was, look, I'm a writer, y'all are scientists, you explain it to me, and I'll explain it to the world. And they liked that. So I ingratiated myself with these people, and some of them have become very good friends. In fact, Stephen Boyd, our senior science advisor, is probably the best friend I have right now. So anyway, that's the book is an outgrowth of me explaining as best I can what I've learned from these scientists and from the papers and sources they urged me to look up and read. And so that's how I got into the group. All right. So I'm a writer. And if I get something wrong, it's my fault, and et cetera. I have a big brain trust behind me. So
that's super cool. And I want to appreciate you very much for bringing the way people understand things on the common sense to kind of dissolve the hard sciences and make it understandable by the common man. As we continue in this conversation,
exactly,
I'll be having the first part of the discussion taken by my co-host Nneka. So she will take it from me here. Nneka, please take it from me.
Hello, Mike. It's a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, this is fun. I don't think I've ever spoken to people in Africa before, so this is way cool.
Oh, wow.
So, it's my first. Yeah, so you're in Zaria, right? Which is like, sub-Saharan and northeast Nigeria, right?
You know so much about Nigeria, if I should say.
I'm a geography nerd as well as a science nerd. I actually enjoy looking at maps.
Interesting. That's cool. That's back to your book. You made an explanation that I find interesting. The fact that you want the scientists to explain to you, and then you explain it to the general public. And should I mention you are filling in a gap of science communicator, in this case, nuclear communicator, which is one aspect that the industry will so much appreciate regarding the fact that we, the scientists, come and speak all technical terms, and at the end of the day, we leave our audience more confused than we met them. Mm-hmm. So we need more people like you to do this hard work for us. So give us a more explanation on what this book is about.
Well, what happened is about 7 years ago, my co-writer Tim Maloney and I were working on a book called Roadmap to Nowhere, and it's a comparison of an all-nuclear grid in the United States with an all-renewables grid in the United States. And we put it out as an online book. And the only negative pushback we got, it all centered around a half dozen issues. What about the waste? What about meltdowns? What about bombs? What about radiation? Blah, 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 blah. You've heard the usual litany of concerns. And so we realized that we needed to write a prequel the Roadmap to Nowhere to get people up to speed on the subject, because it's really difficult to go, well, nuclear is better than renewables because of this, that, and the other. And then the person reading it is like, yeah, but what about the waste? Yeah, but what about the bombs? Yeah, but what about the radiation? Yeah, but what about Fukushima? You know, so we just decided to tackle all those issues, and that became the book Earth is a Nuclear Planet. Okay. And so it's like 300 pages of text and 150 pages of references. So it's sort of a portable library that serves as a basic plain language page turning explanation of these several issues that people have concerns with. Like the first chapter covers Fukushima, you know, like what the heck happened and what didn't happen and how the media blew it up and what the actual facts are. And it's all written in plain language. And I'll tell you how I came upon the writing style. Because I pretended I was writing a long letter to my sister, who's not scientifically inclined, but who's intelligent. And it's like, hey, Sue, guess what? I figured this out and this out and blah, 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 blah. And so I put it in a language that a regular person could get. And it seems to be very effective. So I'm very pleased with the outcome. Does that help? Does that answer your question?
Very much, very much. And should I say 150 pages of reference? It's a whole lot of dedication to research. You really did.
Yes, there are over 500 links to articles, source material, graphs and charts, scientific papers, and they're put in descending order of difficulty. So I might start with an article from The Guardian and then go to the source paper that they're writing about. So you can see both. Wow. And you can go as deep as you want. Okay.
Wow.
So you can read the book and learn a lot without ever looking at one of the endnotes. But we have a half dozen supplements that do a deep dive into several subjects, as well as just listing links and references. You know, for example, we have a mining supplement, and y'all know about mines, African strip mines in Namibia, and you know the way they're mining for gold in Africa, and generally. It's just this huge strip mine situation. And so we examine mining as well in depth. So if you're interested in that particular subject, then you just dive into that supplement. I'm sorry, I cut you off. What?
That's a holistic book, I must say, because if you went as far as discussing on mining, that's a whole lot. Mm-hmm. It's a whole lot. And then there is this you talking about authoring a book called Roadmap to Nowhere. You really have a thing for Roadmap to Nowhere.
Roadmap to Nowhere, yeah. That was the original.
You really have a thing for giving titles to your work.
That comes from being a writer, you know. Because I, you know, Mark Jacobson, who you probably heard of, he's the big wind and solar guru in the United States. And he has this roadmap to all wind and solar by 2050. And it's he calls it the roadmap. And we're like kind of, well, back at you. If you want to present such a goofy idea as running the entire United States, not just electricity, all energy on wind and solar. So we're kind of like, well, back at you, here's an all nuclear grid, you know, so how do you like them apples? And so that's what we did. And we did a comparison, and now we're revising, we're back to writing Roadmap to Nowhere. So it will be coming out later in the year. And so Earth is a Nuclear Planet is leading up to Roadmap to Nowhere. Because the big problem that we have is there's all these people that think, oh yeah, we're just going to run everything on wind and solar. And they never pencil it out. Oh, batteries will get better. Oh, that's nice. But if we say reactors will get better, you won't even listen. But we're supposed to accept that batteries will get better.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, if batteries could get better, the reactors can get way better.
No, way better, way better. In fact, what we did is when we did, we're doing Roadmap to Nowhere, and we said, okay, we're going to build an entire U.S. nuclear grid just on existing technology. just existing technology, Gen 3. And then here's what it costs and here's what it would take. And then here's a big discount for Generation 4, you know, with passive cooling and no meltdowns, et cetera, and smaller footprint. So, but anyway, that's Roadmap to Nowhere. But if you want to talk more about Earth as a nuclear planet, I'd be more than happy. I don't want to change the discussion to another book. So.
Very well. So I was hoping you would tell us what brought about the title of the book.
Well, because as we were writing it, I had an epiphany that Earth is a nuclear planet. And Tim is like, well, what do you mean by that? I said, well, simple. at least half of the heat in the Earth's core comes from radioactive decay of potassium, rubidium, uranium, and thorium, plus a little bit of fission. But that at least half of the heat in the Earth's core comes from radioactive material. If the core was not hot enough to be molten, we wouldn't have a magnetosphere. Without the magnetosphere, the solar wind would strip away our atmosphere and we'd be like Mars. Okay? So literally, there would be no advanced life forms on this entire planet if this wasn't a nuclear planet. So it's our nuclear core that allows us to have a protected atmosphere that enables us to have advanced life forms, okay? So this is a nuclear planet, okay? I mean, Elon has this weird idea that he's gonna terraform Mars and build an atmosphere. Well, Mars's core is solid. So it doesn't circulate. So it doesn't generate a magnetosphere. So no matter how much oxygen or whatever they pump into the atmosphere, such as it is on Mars, it's going to get stripped away by the solar wind. Okay? So it is folly to think that we're going to terraform Mars. Or I'll put it differently. It's folly to think that we should spend money and time doing that when we really need to fix up our own planet before we go gallivanting around the universe, trashing another one. So what we need to do is we need to respect the material that is literally giving us life or allowing us to live and do something useful with it instead of demonizing it, okay? So Earth is a nuclear planet. Literally would not exist if it wasn't.
Very much. So I will be handing over to my host to go ahead from here.
Okay, so, Jared.
All right, thank you very much. That's a very, very interesting explanation of the title of the book. And I quite appreciate the fact that the effect of the magnetosphere keeps us in shape. It's what allows our atmosphere to exist and the oxygen we have to be of good use to us. And I quite appreciate the fact that this book has been written in a way that is very much understandable by the common man. And I see the reviews from the Amazon page, how people explain how useful it's been. And I've also read through the book as well, I've not finished it, but I've scanned through, like I've gone through the main chapters. I think I stopped at chapter 19.
Well, you've gone through a lot of the book.
Been a page turner, and I actually took notes of what I've written from my reading through it as well. So why did you write this book the way you wrote it? Like, because I've read some books, some technical books explaining, I see there is no equation, there are no technical jargons that are there in the book. Why did you write it in that way?
Because I want regular people to be as familiar with nuclear power as they are with an internal combustion engine. It's really not that exotic. The science about the actual core is pretty close to rocket science, but the rest of the plant is a steam plant, basically. Yeah. And so, like, for example, you can convert a coal plant to nuclear. You take out bad heat, put in good heat, because a reactor is a heat engine.
Yeah.
Okay. And the key thing I think that the mistake that people are making these days is they go, oh, carbon fuel is bad, so we should go to a fuel-free paradigm rather than a carbon-free fueled paradigm.
Okay.
So what it is they sort of demonize the concept of fuel by making it equivalent to carbon, like all fuel is bad. No, carbon fuel is bad. Uranium is a non-carbon fuel.
That's like throwing away the
and bat. Yeah, and one other big mistake people make is they think that wind and sunshine are fuel. They are not fuels. They are natural phenomenon that you set up a harvesting machine to capture some of that ambient energy.
Sure.
So wind and solar are not energy production systems. They are energy harvesting systems.
Cool.
Whereas a reactor is an energy production system. And the key thing is we need to switch to carbon-free fuel, not fuel-free systems.
Cool. Fantastic. I love the way you started the book by debunking some kind of myth about and also comparing maybe the negative aspects of other industries to what has happened in the nuclear industry. I kind of wonder, what line of thought did you have? Did you kind of have some specialty in reading how human beings think? Like, we tend to magnify the negatives more than the positives, and does that hope to appeal to how we think as humans and make judgments? Like, that line of, like, the way you started the book, and then you started with debunking some saying some
debunking the myths. Well, you know, people are wired to be fearful, you know, and also they are wired to be particularly fearful of something they don't have any common interaction with. Like, we all used fire, you know, we've all used coal or wood. And so it's not this mysterious thing, whereas a radioactive substance is like voodoo. It's like, well, what goes on in there? I don't know, but they say it's scary, so we better watch out. And the way it became demonized is it goes all the way back to 1927, where a guy named Herman J. Muller made the audacious statement that there is no safe dose of radiation.
Yeah,
it is utterly, completely, and provably wrong, but it sticks in people, and they're like, well, you know, all radiation is dangerous. That's like saying all water is dangerous. No, drinking 2 gallons of water is deadly, but if you don't drink some water, you're gonna die. You know, and so it's putting the fear and the paranoia into perspective so people can actually have an intelligent conversation about something rather than, you know, what degree of demonization shall we assign to this thing? But it all started back in 1927. And that's why the companion book for Earth as a Nuclear Planet is called the L&T Report, and that's coming out really soon. And it is about the linear no threshold concept, in other words, which means there's no safe dose of radiation.
Cool.
And that lie has been the bedrock of nuclear regulation, and it is provably wrong.
Cool. I mean, like, I was going to ask you about the L&T threshold and the stories around it and all that. We also had the story about the Fukushima accident, which is the most recent nuclear accident that is making a lot of governments tighten their regulations. The U.S., for example, the safety systems have really skyrocketed, and also the regulations have been very stiffening. Just recently, that some new nuclear technology companies are coming up with innovating the regulation, where they are having some combined licensing and all that. Outside that, the regulatory, from the regulatory standpoint, it's been kind of like making it more difficult to build out nuclear power plants, and adding to the fear of radiation makes it a whole lot difficult for us to get this. And I love the way you actually pointed out the comparison of the bananas. Like, you made statement about the banana equivalent dose, you know, making it closer to what people can relate to it, you know. So you also talked about the zoomies and all that, which was the terminology from the U.S. Military. So
the U.S. Navy.
U.S. Navy. So, and this makes me kind of want to dovetail into another aspect, although you have dealt a very good explanation about it. I was in Oklo, Gabon, where the first naturally occurring nuclear fission reaction.
Oh, cool. You went there?
Yeah, I was there.
Oh, that's so cool. I would love to go there.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. Yeah.
I think we should organize some nuclear outreach to that place. But yeah, I was there. And the story I heard there about that place was not too palatable, you know. And it makes me think about what we as nuclear advocates need to do more for people to accept this technology. The explanation you gave in your book cannot reach the common man in that locality. What they know is what they have experienced from that naturally occurring, the leaching from the radiation of the uranium that and the naturally occurring fission reaction that has occurred. So the story is that there have been some PET defects from the effects of that the radiation in that place. So when I went to visit that place, it was after the climate Africa Climate Week in Gabon. You know, so when I talked to people around me that I was going there, those who knew that place say, "Oh, it had a very sad history in their country." So how can we talk to people in this kind of place that, hey, this thing is for good, although they have exploited it for economic gains, which is the uranium. They exploited it there. It was a very big mine site for uranium. And there they still have the French laboratory still doing some experiments there. What can you say about that kind of place? And how do you communicate the good things that nuclear has to offer to people who have experienced the negative aspects, as the case of Oklo Gabon maybe? Not only that one, I would want to also draw another illustration from a place like Niger. You know, the Nigerians have also been exploring uranium deposits. And in the face of geopolitical recent happenings, they might not want to continue that dealings in the way they have always been doing it. So it makes me think, like, how do nuclear advocates come to understand that these negatives exist, but how do they, like, reason beyond what the negative aspect they have experienced and then begin to think on the higher level, like, that we have greater benefits to derive from this technology, Mike?
Okay, well, yeah. One thing about Oklo, it's an open reactor. So if you hang around the thing, it might not be very healthy. Reactors are in, you know, they have pressure vessels and containment domes, and Oklo does not. You know, I mean, there are various places on Earth, for example, where there's exudations of carbon dioxide. And if you stand close enough, what was that lake in Africa that had a carbon dioxide release and it killed a bunch of local people? Remember that? Was it in Rwanda or someplace?
Carbon dioxide?
You remember what I'm talking about?
You said carbon
dioxide. There was some lake that belched a bunch. But anyway, you know, there are all sorts of places on Earth that have dangerous natural phenomenon.
Yeah.
Okay. So contain the phenomenon and eliminate the danger. So writing off nuclear because there were some birth defects around Oklo is, I mean, it's to me, that's a lame excuse. You know, well, if all reactors were built like an open cave, yeah, there might be some problems, but they're not built like that. So why even go there?
Cool.
You know, so that's my response to birth defects at Oklo. And then what were you talking about? The mining in Niger.
Yeah.
My understanding is that Niger was a French colony.
Yeah, it is.
And colonialists don't always go out of their way to protect the health of the people they colonize, which might have something to do with the people in Niger and Mali trying to get the French to leave. You know, I don't think the French are looked upon very fondly. And I would guess that their mining practices may not have been as diligent as they should. Okay. Yeah. In Australia, they have a mine. I can't remember the name of the Mary Kathleen mine. Okay. Yeah. They strip mined that place for years, and then what they did is they rehabilitated it, and now they have cows. They have a pasture where cows eat grass on top of what used to be the mine, and people drink that milk.
Wow.
Okay. So mines can be. I'm pretty sure it's called the Mary Kathleen Mine, yeah. Australia. So mines can be rehabilitated. Strip mining is kind of difficult because it's such a wide area. We did that with our own in our own native lands in America in the Navajo Reservation. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh yeah, they're just Indians. You know, there was a lot of racism in America. Well, let's put this more than now, but still we got a bunch of it. But anyway. I'm not really a big fan of mining, and there's a mining supplement in our book.
Okay.
And our mining supplement brings up a very, yeah. Well, did you read the supplement?
No. I didn't get to that level.
Because it's quite a deep dive, and you might want to take a look at it.
Okay, but, sure, I'll do that.
Yeah, I am not a big fan of uranium mining, and I quite frankly think that uranium mining is the Achilles heel of nuclear power. And the reason why is you need to dig out of the earth 71,000 tons of material to wind up with enough energy for 1 terawatt hour throughput of a nuclear reactor. Long story short, even with ISL figured in, you know what ISL is in situ leaching, where they put leaching liquid into the ground. They don't mine, but they leach it out. Even with leaching taken into account, nuclear still has twice the raw material waste of wind and solar. What we need, it's true, and I'm sorry, look at my mining supplement, and there's a lot of nuclear people that didn't want me to put that out, and I'm like, dude, this is reality, and we have to confront it, and we need a solution, and we do have a solution. Seawater uranium can be easily harvested.
Okay.
It might cost twice the price of the mine uranium, but there's no scarcity, there's no import, there's no government controls, there are no market shenanigans. And almost any country that wants to go nuclear has a coastline, or they have an ally with a coastline. Okay.
Yeah.
And if you eliminate uranium mining, our material throughput is a mere fraction of whatever wind and solar could help to do. So the Achilles heel is uranium mining, and there's billions of tons of it in the ocean that can easily be harvested. And we have all this depleted uranium for making fuel. We have all this used fuel, and we have thorium, and we have a lot of bombs to dismantle. And quite frankly, in my view, we shouldn't be mining uranium at all. None. Zero. If France wants uranium, they have a seashore. And they don't have to colonize an African country to get their uranium.
Yeah.
Or pretend to be post-colonial nice people or whatever, you know, which apparently the Malians aren't buying. You know, it's like, yeah, whatever, get out of my country. Yeah, you know.
All right. Okay, so thank you so much, Mike Conley. It's been quite very educating, very enlightening, and very enriching talking with you. And I want to get to.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, we are winding down in this conversation, and I want you to give maybe some kind of highlights of what hopes you have that the readers of this book get out of it. What do you hope? You have talked a lot about the mining aspects, you've talked about the fears that people have, you've talked about, and while I was reading, I got a lot of information about the histories of the nuclear industry, the new histories of nuclear power plants and different aspects of it, the health implications, the industrial implications and all that. What's the hope that you have that an average reader of this book will get out of it? What hope do you have in that regard?
Well, the book was originally called Fear of a Nuclear Planet, because we were addressing nuclear fear.
Okay.
And then we just thought that Earth is a Nuclear Planet is a groovier title, you know. But basically, the hope for the book is to quell nuclear fear to where people have a cautious concern instead of a phobic reaction, to where they can have a sensible conversation about the ability, the problems, the whatevers of nuclear without flipping out about the whole thing. You know, I'll give you an example. You know that water in Fukushima? That water they got for the flushes through the reactor and they stored it?
Yes.
Right? Everybody's like, oh my God, we're all going to die. You could drink one half shot, a shot glass, one half shot every day of your entire life. Yeah. And all it would do is match the radiation you already have in your body. Wow. And so we have to get over the push button fear. And so I tried to take all the fear issues and explain them in normal language so people can get it.
That's very fantastic.
And once they have it, then we can have, then we can have a conversation about roadmap to nowhere, all nuclear, all renewables, you know, because quite frankly, I think the main reason why people are into renewables is they're afraid of nuclear power. Okay. It's kind of like, well, you know, we can't fly because airplanes are dangerous. So now we have to like walk or build a road. And it's like, well, just get on the damn plane. Oh no, planes are dangerous. You know, is that kind of nonsense that we have to get tamping down so we can have a sensible discussion.
Okay. That's cool. Thank you very much, Mike. It's been a very generous serving of facts seasoned with a whole lot of perspective that you've given us in this conversation today. And I want to take a cue from the afterword that you gave in that book, and you said that knowledge is power, and with that comes responsibility. Yes. But I would like to make an addition or a modification to that. I would like to say that applied knowledge is power, and with that comes responsibility. And I would like to say that the nuclear
industry, I like that.
Yeah, because just a sitting knowledge may not be powerful enough, but when you start applying it, it becomes a bit more useful. So the government in Africa and other developing world needs to actually sit up and begin to apply this relevant research and knowledge that has been given to our world, and also the immense benefits that nuclear technology has brought to us. Mike, I want to say a very big thank you for this time that you have brought out to have a conversation with us on AfriNuke podcast. And I would like to ask, do you have any special offer for this book for people in Africa or some developing climes? I don't know. Any kind of special offer? Maybe from
offer? What do you mean? I to my knowledge, you can buy it on Amazon, but I know the guy that did my sketches, he bought it and he's in Indonesia, and he bought it on Amazon. It's like a month later it gets there, you know.
Okay, it's okay.
So unfortunately, no.
Okay,
it's okay. You know what? My next book's coming out soon, and we should talk.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, so there's hope that we'll get a very good offer from your lineup of books. So I hope that you continue this great work for the industry, and we are very grateful for the time we've had with you. I don't know if you have any parting word or summary statement for our audience before we call it a day.
Make energy, not war.
Wow. Oh, I saw that cartoon.
Interesting.
Thank you very much.
That is actually a logo. It's on the title page of the book, Make Energy, Not War.
Yeah, I saw the cartoon in the book.
All right.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mike. And it's been a very educating
stimulating
time. Hoping to have some more time with
you. Yeah, love to talk to you guys again.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, whistle me up. We'll talk again, okay?
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.